Actually, the dog that I hit with the Bible was a boxer. But the runs in my socks were real. This is what is real is the fact that my young cousin, after his first outing with his BB gun, didn't want to have it taken away from him. And since someone had to render up an accounting to the authority figures, the adults of the family, and say what had happened, because there was manifestly a hole in the side of the church, and the bull could still be heard bellowing, and the owner of the bull was bellowing too. Someone had to render up an accounting, and this was done at the dinner table at night to all of the elders of the family. And it was always my privilege to render up accounts. And the reason that it was my privilege to do so was that, now all of us have faculties. Some people can turn backflips, and some can hold their breath, and some are marvelous dancers. It was always my blessing to be able to tell exactly what had happened without deviating one whit from what happened, but add just enough to convince the elders that while I wasn't lying, something funny had happened, and they would laugh. And if they laughed, my young cousin got to keep his BB gun. It was just that simple. And that's when I learned that storytelling besides being entertaining has utility. So it is a thing of redeeming gracefulness. I sold Bibles in Miami Springs just prior to the time I had the encounter with the Brindle Mark boxer. The man who was training me to sell Bibles, who was named Albert Vaden, and who was one of the most outrageously flamboyant characters I've ever met, asked me what I really wanted to do, and I said, well, I would like to curb my anger, because it seems to me I'm just mad all the time. People do things to me, and I always think of the perfect comeback about 4 days later. Just what I should have said, and then they're in another state. And it eats on me. And he said, well, why don't you just make up a story about it? That way, you'll not only collect material, but this will give you an incentive for using the material. And in the early days when I was playing folk music, in order to work all the time, just like everybody else, I had to travel long distances. It wasn't that there weren't, when you were looking for work, it wasn't that there weren't bushes to shake, and plenty of them, but the problem was that they were so far apart, and you worked 6 nights a week and just had a little bit of time to travel at the end of the week, which necessitated fast passages. And this in turn occasioned unwelcome meetings with the constabulary, who never seemed to see things your way. Oh, it ate on me. I learned this song off a deputy sheriff from DeKalb County, Georgia. That old boy arrested me. He had every high-performance accessory known to humankind on his county pursuit vehicle. He had Goodyear polyglass wide boot series 60 tires, foot and a half wide, with the big white letters on the side of each tire. It said Redneck. He had mag wheels, hooker headers, cherry bomb resonators, Delco airlift pleasurizers, spring shackles, chrome tailpipe extensions, a four-speed gear shift, a high-rise manifold, a four-barrel carburetor, and a Le Mans racing stripe on his Massey Ferguson tractor. He pulled me over, he said, "Boy, don't you be talking spiteful and nasty and mean at me like none of them hippy-dip liberal punks come through here every day from Macon. Driving them Volkswagen microbotics, all them sleeping bags and chemical commodes in the bed of them like some kind of mobile orgy." There I was writing out a ticket at one of them long-haired fruits. He leaned out of the window, he said, "Baby, give me 5 cheeseburgers and a Coke." I pulled him out of that contraption and chucked his butt through a Wake Up America billboard. Now right about there, I knew I was dealing with a primitive man. He was wearing a breech clout made out of 2 Fruhoff mud flaps, a styrofoam pith helmet with an STP decal on the front, Tom McCann penny loafers with quarters stuck in the top, and he was well armed in the tradition of the DeKalb County law. Over his bare chest, he had 2 45 caliber bandolier belts with the cartridge loops alternately stuffed with Hava Tampa jewels and Slim Jims. He had a shoulder holster made out of a PF sneaker with a toe cut out, carrying an axe handle personally autographed by Lester Maddox. He said, "Boy, don't you be talking spiteful and nasty and mean. Now look here, since you're something of a homeboy, I'll let you off easy with a traffic warning citation." Now, in DeKalb County, these warning citations are printed up in the form of bumper stickers. He went back and he got me a bumper sticker off the tractor, peeled the brown paper off the back and licked it one time. Slopped it over the rear of my car. I went back and read it later. It said, "Eat more possum." Well, I had so much fun going up and down the road telling that story. And in Mackinac Island and Chicago and Santa Monica and everywhere I went, I told that story. I told it in Canada. And it is a sublimation, of course, of something that really happened, and it happened in DeKalb County. And I was treated most grievously and unfairly in DeKalb County by a minion of the law on more than one occasion. And about in 1980, which was About 8 years after I'd started telling that story, I played a place called the Great Southeast Music Hall. And after the show, the promoter came back and he said, "Well, Gamble, I have some people here that would like to see you." And I said, "Well, great, some supporters, some fans, maybe somebody who wants to do an interview." He opened the door and these guys filled in that filled up the sky. They all had to duck to come through the door, and they came through sideways. And they lined up against the wall. There were about 11 of them. And it was just about as stalwart a beef trust as I've ever seen in my life. And the spokesman said, "We're all sheriff's deputies for DeKalb County." Well, my life passed in review behind my eyeballs. And I thought, my God, I knew I should have flown. I'll never get out of here. And then one of them stepped up and he said, "Well, we wanted you to have this because we understand that you've been telling this story all over the place for the last 8 or 9 years." And they gave me a certificate of honorary deputyship in DeKalb County. And I'll tell you, after 20 years in this business, that is the finest honor I've ever been given. And I've got that certificate at home on the wall, framed the same way they framed me in DeKalb County in 1970. So it might seem a little bit petty to you, but that's another one of the reasons people tell stories. To sublimate what actually happens and render it up somehow in a way that gives enjoyment so that you don't choke on the thing. Because God knows there's a lot to choke on. Well, at first, I just played music on the guitar and sang songs because that's what was expected in the clubs that we all played in at the time. And but since, in order to really get along, I had to work all the time, like almost 48 or 50 weeks of the year, that meant I had to play the same places over and over again. And I soon found that the audiences in those skull orchards wouldn't sit still for Southern Gothic art songs and child ballads. Or the Wildwood Flower played interminably. because as my good friend Yvonne Streetman says, there are only so many ways a person can set their hair on fire. So pretty soon I was faced night after night with walls of people who were talking a lot. So I started expanding the introductions to the songs with one-liners and two-liners. It's easy to pick these things up. You overhear somebody at a family picnic say, well, that kid was so ugly he had to ambush breakfast. And you say, well, that's pretty colorful. And you tell it, and then some old boy in the audience comes up and says, you know, that kid was pretty ugly, but my sister-in-law had a kid that was so ugly that the doctor that delivered it held it up and got one good look at the face and slapped the mama. So that goes in the show. And all these possibilities start to open up. You start collecting stories and situations and little bits of business, just the way you collect folk songs or guitar licks. And there's a lot of incentive in that too, because pretty soon you find out that these raffish audiences and these little hillbilly jooks will shut up and listen if you just keep a narrative going all the time. And now and then you even borrow from unlikely sources. Turn on the television one night after a show and Johnny Carson comes on and says, well, Tammy Faye Baker's been committed to the Betty Ford Institute for mascara abuse. Yes, I've been guilty of saying that. It's just like Mr. Disk said, if you want to tell stories, they're all around you. The reason I started talking and playing the guitar at the same time was that I just liked the guitar too much to put it down while I told the story. Is there a man amongst you? Is there a woman amongst you? Who can tell me the meaning of nostalgia?
What is it?
Rumble seats and running boards, clamshell fenders, bullet headlights. Saturday nights at the Terminal Tavern. Saturday matinees at the Baby Grand Theater. What is it? Or is it sitting in Miss Beck's sixth grade classroom, everybody say, hey, when you get to high school next year, don't get Miss Eulalia Singletary for a teacher. She's a witch. My first day of high school, in walked my new homeroom teacher, Eulalia Singletary. 6 1/2 feet tall. She loomed above us like a myopic praying mantis. Blue rents in her white hair, chalk white skin, bloodless lips, little eyeballs like pen lights shining through a Missouri road map. She wore those Dr. Scholl's lace-up pedicure pumps and silk print dresses from which emanated clouds of lilac water and talcum powder. And though she was the butt of many a coarse and callow juvenile joke, what dreams of love and altruism pulsed in that withered breast. Miss Eulalia Singletary. Soon the Bean Creek boys posed a moment of truth. They smuggled a 38-inch scarlet king snake into Miss Eulalia's desk drawer. Now there are those amongst you, knowledgeable in the field of herpetology, who will verify the fact that a scarlet king snake is virtually identical to a coral snake, the only fatally poisonous reptile on the North American continent, save for its color markings. Both snakes are banded in the colors black, red, and yellow, but the sequence of the colors varies according to the species. If you're knowledgeable in this, you'll recognize a scarlet king snake as a friend to man. On the other hand, you go messing with a coral snake, one more white shirt will do you. Miss Eulalia Singletary came levitating into the class and led the class in the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag and the Lord's Prayer and various other examples of theological and nationalistic errata which have since been deemed superfluous by the 9 old men. I mean 8 and 1. She then made the announcements of the day. These she generally inscribed with chalk upon the blackboard, but this day there was no chalk at the blackboard's rim, the Bean Creek boys having removed same, which would force the teacher into the drawer wherein awaited the servant. She began. She said, boys and girls, your principal asks that I remind you that band practice will occur on the playing field today as it's such a sunny day. He also asks that I remind you once again, you rapscallions have purloined my chalk. She slid open the drawer, reached downward, froze, polished off her spectacles, and continued, he asks that I remind you once again, that those of us who reside in southern climes should at all times be aware of the difference between the dread coral snake and his harmless and colorful cousin, the scarlet king snake. She wrested the wriggling serpent from out of the drawer, held it aloft, looked right at Hutto Proudfoot, and said, red on black, friend of Jack. Red on yellow, kill a fellow. Black on head, you're dead. Dropped the snake in the wastebasket, shut the drawer, and dismissed the class. All those Bean Creek boys were out there doing shalom. And from that time on, whenever anyone had the temerity to put down Miss Eulalia Singletary or the ill grace to refer to her as a witch, Hutto Proudfoot, Hilo Poindexter, me, and Shelby III, why, we'd stomp the purity hell out of them. Another true story. That story happened in Winter Park High School when I was a youngster there. The teacher's name was not Eulalia Singletary, of course. But one of the reasons I changed it is that she looked exactly the way I described the person in the story. Exactly. Which brings me around to this. I pondered for a long time and even anguished over the fact that I was describing someone that exactly who, through an accident of nature, had been made to look like a Norman Rockwell illustration. And I wondered if she wouldn't be hurt, and I could only conclude that sometimes if you're trying to devise something or put something together that wasn't there before, that perhaps it is excusable if you tell the truth while you're doing it. Go ahead and change the name so as not to point a finger. But while you're at it, render the person up as they really are, and in this case, they are a hero. And that, I think, is a very important part of storytelling, or lying, if you will, that you should not focus on what people call these days victims, but rather choose your characters for their heroic propensities and glorify that, because heroism is all around us. And even if you have a victim, and it's perfectly all right to have a victim if you extricate the victim later on or let the victim redeem themselves or carry the day and become a hero, that makes it all the much more rich, which I think is another great object of storytelling. And finally, satire is a lot of fun. It's certainly not the highest form of art. It's probably rather low on the scale of art. But I think the trick to satire, or poking fun at people and things and institutions, is to poke as much fun at you or yourself as you do at anybody else. And I, as a storyteller, I think if you do this, and I had to learn the hard way, you know, I had to have people come up and say, hey, you know, think about what you're doing. If you do this, that is, poke as much fun at yourself, laugh as much at yourself as you do at any other group, or if you're going to satirize one group, you know, say the Unitarian Church, that's the one with the lightning rod on the steeple. Well, don't stop there, you know. Say an Episcopalian is someone who will do anything for the Lord as long as it isn't tacky. Spread it around. And it'll be all right. So in this storytelling workshop, which is much more a workshop than a performance, and I'd remind you that I and a good many others will be performing tonight, and we hope that all of you are participants in the audience and some of you on stage, and will thereby see the show side of things. Would like to end this talk this afternoon by showing how the grist for stories of this sort are around us all the time. I have a friend who is a blacksmith in North Carolina, and a good one. And he is a man like my friend Mr. Disk, with a fine eye for detail. And he told me that he was down near Sugar Mountain one time at the height of the antique season, and an old friend of his who was long since retired, an old country man with a benign manner but a good sense of humor, who still likes to work on the weekends and help his buddy out who has the Gulf Station that he's known for 40 or 50 years, was standing out by the pumps one day when a lime green Lincoln Continental rolled in, and it rolled in, and it rolled in, and it finally got by the pump and stopped. And as it came in, the old boy who had never uttered an uncivil word to anyone, so far as my friend knew, noticed that there was the emblem of the American Medical Association on the windshield of the car, and there was a Florida tag with the prefix one. And I don't have to tell you, of course, being from Florida, you know that that means the car was registered in Miami, because Dade County is the biggest county in Florida. The door opened and a gentleman got out with a capacious build and stretch pants that matched the automobile, and a cardigan, and said, "Fill her up, Pop." And then just kind of gazed about the horizon, looked around at the mountains, and the old gentleman's pumping that gas. And the old boy's just looking around, and four or five people in the car, baubles and